Thank you to everyone for being here. Those of you who have been helping support the guest group here, Integral Zen, who come back through the Rinzai lineage originally with some modification now. So the Rinzai style of Zen. I was just outside earlier and I could hear some shouting going on in the Zendo, you know, which is kind of goes along with the flavor of that school. And they've been coming here for some years and appreciate the way they come here and bring an attitude of service and gratitude and taking care of the place. But of course, it takes everyone who lives here a lot of effort in supporting that too. But this supporting this Dharma practice in whatever lineage certainly brings real value to people. I wanted to bring up a koan case. Maybe we'll start with a comment from Master Rinzai. So in our tradition or the lineage here, although it's a Soto Zen lineage temple, so therefore it kind of looks back toward, it's called Master Dogen, the founder in Japan, and Master Keizan, a couple of generations down. They're known as the mother and father of Soto Zen in Japan. And then those roots go through China back to Master Tozan. And of course, in these several schools of Zen, but the dominant schools were Soto and Rinzai. Those are the dominant schools now. And a real great exemplar of the Rinzai school, Master Rinzai, or Linji, Chinese. So I'm just going to bring up something by Master Rinzai to open. So from Master Rinzai, you keep trying to find Buddha, but Buddha is merely a name. Don't you know what it is that you are running around seeking? The Buddhas and the ancestors of the three periods and the ten directions appear only in order to seek the Dharma. You followers of the way who are studying today, you too have only to seek the Dharma. Attain Dharma and you're all done. Until then, you'll go on transmigrating through the five paths of existence just as you have been. What is Dharma? Dharma is the Dharma of mind. Mind is without form. It pervades the ten directions and is manifesting its activity right before your very eyes. But because people lack sufficient faith in this, they turn to names and phrases, attempting to grasp the Buddha Dharma through written words. They're as far away as heaven from earth. So what is Dharma? Dharma is the Dharma of mind. Mind is without form, manifesting its activity right before your very eyes. Just say that as an opener. And then the koan is from the Book of Equanimity, case 48, Vimalakirti's Non-Duality. The preface. Marvelous activity may be limitless, but there is a place where the hand cannot reach. Speech may be unimpeded, but there's a time when the mouth can't be open. As Ryugi was a handless man who used his fist, so Kasan was a tongueless man who used words to cause understanding. To liberate the body when halfway down the road, who is such a person? Attention! Vimalakirti asked Manjushri, what about a bodhisattva entering the non-dual Dharma gate? Manjushri replied, as I understand it, with regard to all Dharmas, there are no words or speech, no revelation or knowledge, and it is separate from all conversation. This is entering the non-dual Dharma gate. Thereupon, Manjushri questioned Vimalakirti, saying, "All of us bodhisattvas have each had our say, Venerable Sir. Now you should expound about a bodhisattva entering the non-dual Dharma gate." Vimalakirti maintained silence. This case has some background to it, a story from our Buddhist tradition, from our history. It said that Vimalakirti, don't know anything of him, was famous as an exemplar of being a householder. So somebody who was married, had kids, worked a couple of jobs, was a businessman, was involved in all kinds of things, and was involved in things which wouldn't have been allowed under the Vinaya or Buddhist rules. So he dealt with money, dealt with alcohol, I think he liked to gamble. So it's all kinds of, he was involved in all activities, basically. And is held up as a real example of practice in the world. Right? And also held up, in somewhat in opposition in one sense to a rigid kind of monastic practice of following rules and guidelines, showing it's not just dependent on that. And it said that as he was sick, the Buddha was asking the people go and see him, pay their respects. And it said that nobody would go because Vimalakirti was famously, would go on the, with his Dharma understanding, would crush people. So nobody wanted to be embarrassed by going to go see Vimalakirti. But then it said that he asked Manjushri, and Manjushri being Manjushri, the Bodhisattva of Wisdom, he couldn't refuse to go. But he did say, "I'll go, but I want everyone else to come with me." It's pretty smart. Right? So it said that he brought everybody with him. It says here, they all went to see Vimalakirti in his little 10-foot by 10-foot sick room. And into that room arrived 32 bodhisattvas and 32,000 enlightened beings, or arhats, all in a 10-by-10, with room for the bed and a pitcher of water and a couple of chairs. So that can sound kind of crazy to us. How do 32 bodhisattvas and 32,000 enlightened beings all fit in one room? And to check on Vimalakirti, see how he's doing. I was reading yesterday. I was driving back up the hill, and they still have the stop and go traffic coming up the mountain from Hemet. You had stopped halfway up, and you have kind of a long wait. And so I was doing some reading. So I was just reading something on my phone, and it was a scientific little scientific snippet that said, if we took all of the empty space out of our bodies, out of the atoms in our bodies, and removed all the empty space from everybody's body, then every human being on Earth would fit inside one apple. Someone did the math. Or we could trust that they did the math. So if everybody, 5-6 billion people on Earth can fit inside an apple, then 32,000 arhats and bodhisattvas, I think, can fit in Vimalakirti's room. And, this might be quite a good analogy, because it says if we remove the empty space, though. Right? Even scientifically, we're mostly empty space. And all things are mostly empty space. And yet, we experience, live, navigate, and appear in the world of form. We live in the world of form. At least right now. Right? We function and appear in the world of form. So when asked these questions, you know, if we inquire into emptiness of a non-dual, and typically that is necessarily disruptive to the intellect. We can't help but have an idea about it. You know, we function in our brains like kind of function in that way. You know, we're presented with a problem, and we may go after it. We're trying to work it out, or seeing what the best minds of the day have come up with. You know, and there's nothing intrinsically wrong with that. But here, Master Rinzai says, if you want insight into Dharma as it is, don't be taken in by the deluded views of others. As Master Rinzai says, don't. You know, if you want to really know what the Dharma is, don't be taken in by the deluded views of others. It's an interesting statement. Now, our own ideas, opinions, or projections around Dharma, around Buddha, what we come up with, often in the mind, have a deluded views of others. Because when we look into our own heart and mind, and we the way that we function and we commentate and interpret the world, when we look in and identify a self, and fix a self, that's just another way of creating other. It's just turned in. We do it on the outside, with perceived externals, we find other, and then when it's turned in and we look at this one, you know, whatever we can say about that, however we identify and limit that, that's another way of finding other. You know, for other to be so, there needs to be real and existing separation. There needs to be real and existent separation in this world. There need to be things. Yeah, but when we look at it in this way, if we look into our mind, or look into the Dharma, this experience, we begin to see that there are no things. There are the appearance of things. There are the changing forms. But there is something more. There is something beyond or before the things, the forms. This is a question that is brought to Vimalakirti. Attention. It's a very important word. Attention. So we put our, always have our attention, activate attention where we are. Vimalakirti asked Manjushri, what about a bodhisattva entering the non-dual Dharma gate? You know, so Vimalakirti may be feeling ill, but he's still Vimalakirti. He's still testing, probing, and this is his function as a teacher, even to Manjushri, wants to know what Manjushri has to say. What about entering a non-dual Dharma gate? Again, from Master Rinzai said, among all the students from every quarter who are followers of the way, none has yet come before me without being dependent on something. Here, I hit them right from the start. If they come forth using their hands, I hit them on the hands. If they come forth using their mouths, I hit them in the mouth. If they come forth using their eyes, you get it. Not one has yet come before me in solitary freedom. All are clambering after the worthless contrivances of the men of old. As for myself, Master Rinzai says this, as for myself, I haven't a single Dharma to give to people. All I can do is to cure illnesses and untie bonds. You followers of the way from every quarter, try coming before me without being dependent upon things. Then I'll speak with you, or I would confer with you. So Master Rinzai is very direct. I have nothing to teach, I have no dharma. I have nothing to impart, nothing to bring. But I can, he says, cure illnesses. I can cure illnesses and untie bonds. And that really is the function of a teacher in Zen or in his practice. It's not to impart something or to bring some knowledge across. If so, it'd be easy because, well, you know, you just do it. You just, oh, here you go. And then, you know, write it and then you got it. It's like we've been doing this long enough, right? But we see that it's not something that is based on words or phrases. It's not a thing. You can't hand, you can hand a thing back and forth, but this isn't a thing. But what Master Rinzai can do, like a good teacher, is he can spot the dependence on something and take that away. He can cure that. He can talk with students and a student has an understanding. Bring out the understanding as, okay, this is where this person is holding this, and take away that which is being held. In his manner, knock it out, you know? But probably you wouldn't be able to get a lot away with a lot of this behavior in 21st century California. You'd have to have hell of a liability insurance. So, but he would use these methods. But it's the still it's the same thing. It's the same way. Dissolving or helping to dissolve our the complications that stand in the way of our realization of Dharma. And those are written in the mind. Those are written between the ears. Ways that are understood or not yet resolved or dissolved. You know, we come in dependent usually on something, whether we know it or not. And over again, we're encouraged and aimed right back here, you know, turned right back to the self, and given the project of, you have to resolve it. You resolve it. Just look. And then all, of course, the teachings of, you know, while we're in training, that drive us nuts. Of, okay, we're told the same thing over and over. And then the feeling of it not really, it hasn't really sunk in, or it hasn't quite shifted yet, or I'm leaning into it, but I'm not kind of done. I don't know for sure. That is a good situation to be in. It's not a bad situation to be in. It's good to be frustrated in practice. It's good to be in that place. You like really lean into that. And then that way you are sure when it's resolved. It's better to keep the heat under that way. Keep the heat on it in the sense of just continue over and over to look, to illumine one's nature, to bring this to bear on in this awareness, right? Always our, you know, our predilection, the thing we have to watch out for is that tendency to personalize and bring it in and bring the me in. Bringing the me in where we're within our own heads, perhaps in Zazen or through the day, we're toying or arranging or moving around the circumstances of our life in our heads, and we bring that to our practice, like how we perceive or understand it. We do that. And we do that to some degree as human beings, but it's so important to widen the lens, right? That this thinking me navigating this world is just a part of this world. It's just a part of inhabiting this form. Awareness inhabits this form, thinks and feels and does these other things. But that we need to go, we really need to penetrate that in order to really know the Dharma in our hearts. To, moving beyond just the me and mine. Again, that's not that needs to be cut out and discarded. It's always partial. It's always just a part. It's just a changing weather. It's a rising and falling of karma. Rise and fall. How do you feel today? Good or bad? You know, we can talk about it, but it's irrelevant to the Dharma. You know, how it is always how it is. Vimalakirti's sick. Whether he's sick or well is irrelevant here. He's just sick or he's just well. Again, we're talking about something that is beyond, you know, before the change in forms. If we're in our minds, if we're always enamored of the forms of things, people and things, and that's where the awareness always goes, we always stay on the level of people and things. And then we find practice difficult. So Vimalakirti is testing Manjushri, saying, what is the gate of a non-dual? How does he say it? What about a bodhisattva entering the non-dual Dharma gate? Manjushri replies, as I understand it, with regard to all dharmas, there are no words or speech, no revelation or knowledge. It is separate from all conversation. This is entering the non-dual Dharma gate. Is that so? That's how Manjushri understands it. How do we understand it? How about entering the non-dual Dharma gate? You know, it's very important, of course, in our Zazen to over and over enter the non-dual Dharma gate. You know, to have duality, you need to have more than one thing. There's me and the room. There's me and you over there. There's me and the fan. There's me and. There's some me and. It's dual. There's my life. It's, you know, all of these things that we put in and we make these, we split the world up in a sense. And then how do we enter the non-dual? How do we experience awareness or expand or look into our nature so that the fact of the non-dual, the great life that includes all these things, everybody in the room, you know, where does yourself begin and where does it end when you look out? Does it include the fan? Does it include the room? Does it include the canyon? How big is it? Does it include the sky? Is it bigger? Is it smaller? Where does it end? It's good to, like, blow away out from that place of just what's going on with me and rather experience and sit as this whole life, this whole experience. And take a good look, you know, like a watchful cat. Like, take a really good look at yourself, ourself, this one. So that then these words that don't become traps, this words of what is the non-dual? Well, I have an idea of that's like emptiness. And emptiness is, oh, we might go down that path, but you can look and experience what Master Rinzai, what Master Vimalakirti, what Manjushri all point to over and over. You know, they point to this. And why? As it says in that Heart Sutra, it relieves all pain or relieves suffering. And the human condition to live in separation or to be in the place of Vimalakirti being ill, old age, sickness, death, the changing of the always shifting of impermanence. If we say only within that, then there's, you know, we're living good and bad and ups and downs. And that's fine intrinsically. Intrinsically, it doesn't matter. But as practice, the Dharma offers us the realization, you know, the experience of the non-dual, the experience of great awareness, a place where we can return realize, and dwell, and take refuge, taking refuge in Zazen. In looking at this in here, just kind of went off on a tangent, a couple of teachers of his, successor of the sixth patriarch, I didn't mark it in the book, and he's talking about this realization. He said, when I talk about this sitting, I don't encourage people to find it just in sitting on the ground. It's not dependent on sitting on the ground, this sitting. This Zazen is much more than just sitting and meditating. Meditation is a wonderful vehicle, a very efficient and time-tested way where we arrange the circumstances just so to take the good look. Take the good look. But the good look is always apparent in whatever activity. What tends to get in the way is just the impulse of to work that out, to wear that down. And if you're in that place of working it out or wearing it down, that's a good again, that is a good place to be in, because that's what practice is. That's what the training is. You wear that down or you wear that through until the point where you don't do that in the same way anymore. It becomes clear. Life becomes clear. You understand when asked, you know, what is the gate of non-duality, you can respond in your own way. And if somebody tells you you're wrong, you say, okay. It's right for me. And Master Rinzai over and over again would admonish people and say, I want you to have faith in yourself. I want you to have faith. Don't listen to people. Don't listen to teachers. Don't listen to words or books or any of this. Just look at your own light. Look at your own light. You know, it doesn't come from another person. But rather, you know, our own angst that drives us in practice to really resolve the thing that brought us to it in the first place. Just keep looking there. Just keep the heat under that. I say like about bringing up heat because often we let the fire go down a bit, which is natural. That's just a human way of it. I remember saying to somebody years ago, I said, wow, I feel like the first like several years of practice or something, I was probably running at about 30% of the effort. You know, and they said, yeah, but then that was your 100%. I'm like, oh, well, maybe that's so. You know, you can't measure it. But as Master Rinzai really assures us, and it's almost in every passage that you bring up in here, it's like he tells each person, look for yourself. So Manjushri explains it as well as you can explain it. We don't even have to go over it again. You can say a very erudite explanation of the non-dual. Thereon, Manjushri asked Vimalakirti, we've all had our say, would you expound about a bodhisattva entering the non-dual Dharma gate? Vimalakirti maintained silence. And somewhere else it says that what kind of silence it was. It was a thunderous silence. And this is what we see. This is really the expression of, it's not about words and explanations for Vimalakirti, although words and explanations are helpful when words and explanations are helpful. When it comes to expounding the Dharma, this is his great answer. ...32,000 arhats in the room all look at each other awkwardly, wondering how long he's going to sit there, maybe. So at first quote, Master Rinzai had brought up, what is Dharma? Dharma is the Dharma of the mind. Mind is without form. It pervades the 10 directions, manifesting its activity right before your very eyes. But because people lack sufficient faith in this, they turn to names and phrases, attempting to grasp the Buddha Dharma through words. And so he admonishes again, you know, rather than seeking outside, it's manifesting right before the eyes. The non-dual of the formless, difficult to see. But all these great examples in our tradition and living examples now can be done. If that's what we wish to have be so. I'd like to open it up if anyone has, disagrees or has any comment or question or anything they'd like to raise up or ask or share.
Could you say again what was Anyuta's answer to the question?
Manjushri said, as I understand it, with regard to all dharmas, there are no words or speech, no revelation or knowledge, and it is separate from all conversation. Yeah.
And it's just interesting to me that, and I understand on a certain level that ability to just move freely, from a dependence on one thing to another, but are not Zen teachers completely dependent on, you know, their students, their particular position, that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And I know Tenshin Roshi really values and emphasizes independence. And I do too in a certain sense, but there seems to be something more underlying that value. That is where I am myself.
Right.
That's a good
point to raise up. Within the tradition of a way that we practice, it's for each one of us coming into it, it's not so easy to gain spiritual independence, right? Or to find that independence. So a teacher, Rinzai, or anybody throughout the tradition is pushing and prodding and encouraging and pushing away and doing all of these different devices, so people are able to just, in the end, stand on their own two feet. Yet, independence is not standing apart from anything else. Right? As part of this process of awakening, this process of practice, real independence is the understanding of self, right? That includes, that is interdependent. It shows up as a whole body, as everybody and everything else. You know, the disease is the idea of separation at the beginning. And it can be the disease of separation at the end, too, you know, if it's not really seen. It's like finding independence, but that's not a stopping point, but a necessary thing to, like, as you know, to find it in your own heart and mind. Find realization of the diminishing of suffering, of the assuaging of suffering in your own body, in your own heart and mind.
I have, like with the dependence, we're all interdependent on the world around us.
Mm-hmm.
Is it possible that, like, being dependent on something is a need for something where, like, we worry about something, it's a mindset. So if I say that I need this to be whole, I would be dependent on that. But if I don't need it to be whole, like need in the sense of worry, then I can be interdependent without being dependent on that being part of my life. I'm not sure if I'm being clear.
I'm somewhat following there, but... when they raise up about not being dependent on something, here as well, it's specific. It's being very specific about being dependent on an understanding. He talks about people coming to see him, students, and he finds out what they're dependent on. And that's like, I'm dependent on oxygen and food. And all kinds of things, and I realize that, and there's an interdependence there, and a dependency. But what he's really talking about here is not being dependent on an understanding of life, or an explanation, or a dharma that's understood, but an independence that knows. It's not. It doesn't have to come through a filter of words or explanations. So sure, I mean, you can be, in our human lives, we're dependent or not dependent on all kinds of things. And we have to use a discerning eye to see, is that something that's causing suffering or not? And if it is, can you do something about it? But again, when we look into that realm, we're always just dealing with change in form, all kinds of forms. That's endless while we're alive. But here he addresses the formless, that which is always apparent. You bring it up over and over because for most people it's difficult to see. I hope somewhere we we answered something.
I think we're saying the same thing in different ways.
All right, good.
Yes.
That I feel like I am dependent on understanding
mm-hmm.
in particular ways just because of my way of mapping things out and functioning, but that understanding just constantly gets disrupted by, you know, reality, whatever comes forward, and maybe that sometimes is a Zen teacher.
Yeah, for sure, yeah.
But it's most often something else.
I have another question.
Okay.
I'm really drawn to the story of V.
Bimalakirti?
Yeah.
There you go. Say it three times fast.
It's a great story. Did you say that he was involved in money and gambling, and was that him?
I think so. I might have made up for gambling because, you know, I like to have a flutter myself. But yeah, he was involved in all kinds of worldly pursuits which weren't considered.
So that leads to my question.
Yeah.
How is it possible for him to have attained such wisdom and yet be involved at that level in the material world, if you will?
Mm. I mean, he never attained anything.
He did not.
He already had it. Same thing as you.
That didn't bring him down?
I guess not. And who knows, some of these stories or constructions are probably pretty apocryphal, you know? But then when they're apocryphal in there, they're making a point. You know, what's the point of that being an apocryphal legend? What does that mean? What's it saying here, you know? If we follow any system or way of doing anything, even as something as beautiful as Buddhism, it becomes a cage if we have to stick to the rules. You know, so...
So he was outside the cage.
Yeah. You need someone outside. Right. You need someone outside the cage. Yeah, I think so. All right. Okay, well, thank you. Thank you for listening. And we'll have a little... Well, I'll make an announcement at the end. Let's finish. Thanks.